Hello, hello, my beautiful people. It's your girl, the Damo, and we are here for the Mind Your Business podcast, where your mind should forever and always be your business. How y'all doing? What's up? What's going on? First, let me start off by again, reiterating what you're doing, what's going on, how you feeling. It's been a week for you, girl. It's coming towards the end of the school year. And these kids are showing their behinds. I mean, every time I turn around, we're breaking up a fight, trying to figure out what's going on, why we're fighting. Nobody has any type of interest in conflict resolution. I mean, honestly, I feel like I'm on a spinning hamster wheel in these next couple of weeks. The weather's getting hot. The sad reality is a lot of the kids are going to be in summer school because they're failing classes. Some people aren't graduating. Some people have financial shifts going on in school. Some people are breaking up for the first time, having their first girlfriend or boyfriend, having their heart broken for the first time, having friendships break apart over little petty little things. There's so much like conflict going on my campus, and it feels so heavy. I never imagined that kids endure so much when growing up. I myself, in high school, I was a time for some good, for some bad, but Dominique was definitely an experience. And I look back now as I see these kids and I'm like, man, there's no way they would have been my friend or I could have been in this day and age. Nobody seems to care about other people's feelings anymore. Feelings are the things of the past. Yeah, the kids know all the buzzwords and they know all the things to say in order to, like, you know, get somebody to pay attention. They know the mental health buzzwords. They don't know how to quite use them or cuss words the right way. But they definitely do not know how to feel for another person. They do not understand perspective for another individual. And that's sad. It also hurts me because they're going to grow up to be adults that struggle with being there for other people. It reminds me of how everybody is moving in this world right now after COVID. We seem so detached. We spent a whole year or two, I can't remember at this point, inside. Most of us isolated because we didn't have anybody or we lived alone. Everybody's becoming so desensitized to being a human being. The idea of being a human is dissipating quickly. Technology is taking over. AI is replacing the basic functions of the human being. This is the world our kids live in. This is the world we live in. We live behind screens and we forget that on the other end are thousands of other people who feel things, who go through life, who got their own challenges. In their own conflicts. And when we all mesh together, where it's online or off, we forget everybody's got something. So I ask you again, how you doing? Where you at? Where you been? Where's your mind at? Today's episode will be a little different because we're going to dive into empathy. We've talked about empathy before. We've mentioned it here and there. But in this day and age with what's going on, it's even more important to figure out how to cultivate the ideal of caring for another human being. In a world where sometimes animals and the idea of extraterrestrials gets more attention and care than a human being who beats whose hearts beat just like ours. I don't know why I struggle to say that. Trying to be deep goes wrong. Woo! Anywho, why is it that we can't show compassion and grace to another individual? Mercy that's pressed upon us all the time. We forget about it, but we get so hung up on why somebody else can't see our view. I don't want to get too far ahead of myself, but I feel like today's episode is going to be a good one. Going to be more teaching than anything else, more perspective than anything else. So get comfortable, sit back, unlock your mind, and ask yourself the questions. What is empathy? And how are you doing? This is not your first time on this podcast. You know, we open with a good old monologue. And you also know that we're probably getting this podcast episode out a little late because life has been a life thing. Either way, we're all here to mind our business. So, let's get it started. Where's my theme music? Hello, my beautiful people. Cause your mind should forever and always be your business. Mind your business. Mind your business. Okay, y'all, so we're back. I'm really excited because I think that this is a necessary... All the conversations that we have here are sometimes necessary. I just contradict myself. It's fine. But I feel like in today's climate, in today's societal climate and how everything is transpiring, how the barriers of communication are slowly... increasing, empathy is something that we do need to acknowledge and getting understanding of so that we know how to live better together. Because here's the thing, communication is a key to survival. Okay? In order to survive as a society, as a community, as a conglomerate, you have to be able to communicate, right? You have to be able to communicate well. A lot of communication or lack thereof comes from or can stem from lack of empathy as well. Like I said earlier, our society now is shifting swiftly by technology. And I'm not just here to say technology is the problem, la, la, la. But there is a shift. Technology is advancing in order to help us, but it's only advancing in the ways to help us because we have become lazy in our interactions. Okay. Most of the human beings now, attention span is like 6 seconds long. If I don't make a video or if I don't say something catchy in 6 seconds, ain't nobody gonna pay attention to my reels. You know what I mean? You're gonna keep scrolling by. A lot of our advances in technology are out of need for human behavior shifting to me in a more negative way. Lack of communication, lack of empathy, right? So today's conversation, I feel like should start a conversation and should start the shifting of our mindset, right? Before I even get too deep though, y'all know I love a good definition. Okay, so I got a couple of definitions for empathy because, like I said, it's more than just feeling like, oh, I feel for this person when they're sad. Like, it runs so much deeper. Where is it? Okay. Empathy. I'm sorry, y'all. No, I'm looking through my notes. I ain't got a lot today. I got a little couple of nuggets for y'all. So this should be good. Look at me bigging myself up. This should be good. Okay. Empathy. Empathy is the ability to understand and share the feelings of another. This is important. There's also
another definition that says empathy is considered the psychological superglue that connects people and undergirds cooperation and kindness. Why I say that word like that? Cooperation and kindness. It's a psychological glue that connects people and undergirds cooperation and kindness. Some also say empathy is a powerful predictor of things we consider to be positive behaviors that benefit society, individuals, and relationships. And lastly, and this is going to be like, what? We'll get into it. Empathy can be seen as motivating many types of pro-social behaviors, such as forgiveness, volunteering, and helping, and negatively associated with things like aggression and bullying. That's going to be like kind of where we round up towards the end a little bit. That's crazy. Empathy, something that we view as relating to somebody or connecting with somebody or feeling their feelings, can also be considered something aggressive or as bullying, antagonistic. Most people don't think about that, right? And here's what I really get like, you know what grinds my gears about these like buzzwords is that we just throw them out with no context. We have no idea what it is that we're saying. There are people walking around saying, I'm an empath, but don't really know what that means or what that entails, or what kind of connection that means that you have with somebody. You know, not everybody is born empathetic. Let's just put it out there right now. I'm jumping ahead of my notes, but it's okay. We can throw right here real quick. Being empathetic is not something everybody has. Not everybody has the ability to lessen themselves a little bit and share or hold space for somebody else's feelings and be able to understand them, right? Not everybody has that ability. But it can be taught. It can be learned. It can be cultivated within yourself to produce for others. But what I said, what grinds my gears is that we throw things out and we feel like we really know that we're connecting with people and people have expectations, and then we drop the ball. You can't say you have empathy for somebody, but it only be contingent upon if it's beneficial to you. That's not empathy. That's doing something to throw back in somebody's face. That's dangling a carrot over somebody's head saying, hey, remember I did this for you? Or, hey, remember I was here that time? I remember when you were struggling, I was right there, right? That's how empathy can also be viewed as negative or be used in the negative aspect, right? So let's do some distinguishing, okay? Empathetic people ask themselves, maybe I need to find out more before I jump to a harsh judgment, period. Right. Empathetic people who are truly born with empathy or practice empathy or whatever, feel for another person. They cannot relate, right, fully. I mean, they can understand. They can take the perspective on and be like, okay, I can look from this perspective. I can feel this person's feelings. I can understand where they're coming from. I understand. I truly understand. I comprehend. Okay. That's empathetic person. Empathetic people will feel drawn to people who they're not even related to. Empathy is not just for people who we're in close relationship with or have blood ties to, right? Empathy will cause you to want to have better relationship with strangers. There are some people, I'm really not one of them. It depends on how I feel, what's the day, what I'm currently doing, whatever have you. Basically, mine is conditional. But when you're in a store and there's a long line, and like everybody's kind of feeling the same way and disgruntled, there are people that will start conversing in the line and sharing how they feel because they can understand the situation that each other's in. There's empathy there. There's a comprehension there for what each other is feeling and how we're both aggravated and want this line to move faster. And how we feel about this cashier is it their first day because what is happening, right? Like, empathy will help you when you see a stranger struggling with their bags and going to their car, and you'll be like, okay, I want to help. Like that. Also, let me back up. That's what a pro-social behavior is. It's something that prompts you to want to do good. Something that wants that causes you to want to help another person, right? So being empathetic or being an empathetic person will cause you to have better relationships with people you don't even know. You won't look at it as like, oh, I don't know them. I don't need to. It's more like, okay, how can I help? How can I serve? Empathy also allows one to be more compassionate with people and their interactions. People who are naturally empathetic have a certain type of patience for people. That's remarkable. I'm a person who always says, I'm not patient. And things of that nature, but I've come to learn, because I'm a very empathetic person. Let me pause. I'm a very empathetic person. Almost to a fault, right? Like I consume somebody's like stuff. Okay, like I'm like, all right, let me take on this thing with you. I'm a carrier. I will throw myself in front of the train for people. Like I'm that person. My job requires me to be empathetic, right? So a lot of people ask me what is it that I do, and then I'm a double back. But a lot of people ask me what is it that I do. I am a student prevention and intervention specialist. That's my title, right? SPI, that's the acronym. It entails of me like basically keeping a temperature check on campus and campus culture, right? I deal with a lot of my interactions are with students 9 through 12. When they get into fights or when there's some type of like suspension that happens most of the times when they come back for ISS and school suspension, they have to meet with me. It's my job to figure out why they did what they did. Is there any remorse? Do they understand why the punishment happened and like why that behavior can't be repeated on campus? And in order to get there, right, I have to ask open-ended questions. I have to find what we call, quote unquote, the root cause of the issue. Now, this is usually when I have students who come back from fights or like classroom disruptions. What else? They might have had a DV interact, like they might have had a DV situation. Most of the times I meet people at their most vulnerable time. And I say it's their most vulnerable time because they're angry, or they're scared, or they're just lost, and now they have produced this negative behavior, and it's my job to figure out what's going on. So I'm not a therapist, I'm not a counselor, but you let my kids tell it, I make everybody cry as soon as they come on my couch. So in a way, I am a counselor, but it only comes off like that is because I have to dig deep and figure out why this person functions the way they do. Why do they think the way they do? What is their background? What has contributed to who they are presenting today? So I have to dig deep. I have to ask questions about family. I ask questions about family history. a lot of times I feel things. So as I'm sitting there talking to them, I'm studying their body language. I'm studying the words that they're choosing, how they're saying their words, what sentences they're forming. And I take all of that and continue to build rapport, right? I let my guard down so that they know that I'm relating to them in hopes of them letting me know what it is that got them to the point that they're at right now. It's very exhausting. Let me tell you that. It's a lot of talking. It's a lot of listening, right? And that means that even if it's a fight and this person was dead wrong and they ran up on something and they feel they should feel completely guilty and they come in my office and they're like low-key proud, I have to listen to that. I have to listen to that and understand why they got so much pride for slamming somebody's head into the ground. I kid you not. I have run into situations where students are in my office and they have blacked out and found enjoyment in what they were describing and how they hurt somebody. And it took days for me to get them to an understanding of why that was wrong. What is because this student had so much trauma, had just known violence their whole life and fighting that it became glee. It became the thrill of the chaos, right? Like, so that's what I do. I sit in a chair, I have kids in my office, and I constantly ask them, hey baby, what's going on? Hey baby, how did we get here? And I choose the approach of being like everybody's favorite auntie or everybody's like big mama or whatever like that. Yes, I've had some kids think I'm that old, but whatever. I play the familiar or the familiar role with these kids in order to create a balance of understanding and love. Because most of the kids I get, when they do get in there and I do talk to them, there's so much stuff going on in their lives. There's so much going on in their home. There's so much going up in their upbringing that I found that they need that. They just want to be heard. They need somebody to hear them. And to be honest, it's not too different from what I needed when I was in high school. You know what I mean? I always said that I was going to grow up to be an adult that I needed when I was a teenager. I was very angry. For those who have heard this story before, it's okay. Just stay with us. Or you can, you know, fast forward. Everybody that's new, come on in the room. Come on in the room. Story time. I was one of those kids growing up who struggled really bad with expressing how I felt. Right? I was a very angry child. My parents got divorced. I saw some things. I had to grow up. I saw some things, meaning like I saw their interactions. I heard their conversations. I was put into an adult position at a very young age, which caused me to mature in a way, but not really mature. I grew up, but I didn't really mature. You know, I always had a deep understanding of things and a solid understanding of things, but I wasn't mature in a way because I felt like I lost out on a lot of stuff in my childhood. But anyway, I was a very angry child. When I was in school, I got into arguments all the time. Sometimes I was the bully. Sometimes I took pleasure in making fun of other people and causing my own chaos. I liked the ruckus. I liked the confusion because it was my comfort zone. I can say that now as an adult because I knew that as a kid. Like, I didn't know that as a kid. I didn't realize that I enjoyed chaos and comfort. Chaos and anger because it comforted me. It's something I had seen. If you're a kid that is a kid of divorce, I'm sorry, I'm stuttering a lot because I'm getting nervous. Let me slow down. If you're a kid of divorce, you understand exactly what I'm talking about. Especially if you were a kid of divorce and you were in the middle of your parents' divorce. Like, you remember the interactions and the things that might have been said and you might stumbled across paperwork, whatever like that. It's a different type of, it makes you look at things a lot differently, right? I say all the time, I've been in conflict resolution since I was a little girl. I was the go-between person between both of my parents. When they used to interact and say if it went sour, I was the one who would step in and say, guys, why are you guys doing? Like, I always took that role of a mediator. I always took that role of showing empathy to each side. Right? The backside of that was when I got around my peers, because I heard of what they were doing in their childhood, and I heard like how their life was, I became envious. And then I would become mean and angry with them and the situations that I was in and this, that, and the third. So I say all this to say, like, in high school, I had a very rough time. In previous years too, like middle school, I started cussing a lot. Like, oh, I cussed like a sailor. That was my favorite way of expressing myself, like cussing my friends, and like sometimes I cussed at teachers. When I got to high, and I fought a few times. Right, I always said it was because if I need to defend myself, but. Looking back now, there was some time my mouth would just go and I would say something to somebody and then it would cause somebody to want to approach me and want to swing. So I had an excuse to like punch them back. But it's like sometimes I created those situations, like real deal. I created those situations. By the time I got to high school, I was full blown like angry and like vicious. Like, I was a mean girl. Great smile. Hey, everybody loved me in a sense because I have personality, right? This feels so uncomfortable talking about myself. Anyway, I had a lot of personality, but at the same time, I was mean. I was mean and I was angry. And I had cussed out teachers. My 4 years of high school, I threw things. I had so many Saturday detentions. I think I only got suspended like maybe one time. Like, I was unhinged. And my high school didn't do much because I was a star athlete. I was given grace. And I really believe that Mr. Dyer didn't only give me grace because I was an athlete, but he gave me grace because I feel like he saw that there was something deeper going on. But I mean, I'm not going to sit here and describe Mr. Dyer. That was my vice principal. Me and him used to go at it all the time. Like, and when I mean go at it, y'all, he wouldn't even go at it with me. This white man would sit there and smile at me and shake his head every time I expressed how I felt about something. And it would piss me off because, like, whoo, I almost cussed. Like, why would you be smiling at me when I'm telling you why I'm upset? Like, ain't nothing about this, like, happy, my guy. Like, so, and it was that, and he was white, and, you know, I'm a little black girl, and I just felt that he was an adversary. And I really didn't feel like I had a lot of adults that understood, like, where I was coming from. Like, yeah, I might have been acting a fool, and yeah, I've been angry, but at the same time, I'm letting y'all know that I'm not all right. Like, sometimes I would say it, and I wouldn't know how to articulate it completely, but I'd be like, yo, something's just off. Or, like, I would try to express how I felt, and nobody was hearing me. High school was a very, very, very rough time in my life. Which seeped into my adulthood and some very questionable choices. But at the end of the day, I told myself as I healed as an adult and I started to understand, the way I reacted to things in my childhood, I said I'd never want to be like that with any kid. I want to be the adult that I needed when I was a kid. I want to be the adult that listens. And that doesn't just say like, oh, you kids just don't understand. And back in my day, like, I want to be the adult that kids know no matter what, she's going to listen. She's going to understand where I'm coming from. And she's also going to give me that real that I need. That's what I do with my kids. I'm empathetic as hell. You know what I mean? I feel for them. I feel for them. I even show compassion on a deep level, okay? Some of these kids end up feeling like they actually came from my womb. But at the same time, I love my kids hard and make them really feel like, you know, Ms. Booker is here for me, but also she's going to give me some sound advice. Like, Most of my kids, it's funny, they told me that they hear my voice in the back of their head when they're in conflict. They say, yeah, Ms. Booker, we hear your voice sometimes and your lectures and your stories and your like little phrases in the back of our head. And I'd be like, then why didn't you listen to it? But it just makes me chuckle because, like I said, I want to be an adult that they can always go to. I want to be an adult that kids feel like she gets it. She gets it. So anyway, that is what I do. That is what I do all the time. And on top of that, I'm a coach, which is basically the same thing. I'm constantly trying to figure out what my kids need. Da, 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 da. You know, I do the same role. I'm a mama bear. But my job requires me to be very empathetic. My job requires me to care so much and give so much feeling. And like I said, listen. I have to listen. Okay. So like I said, some people are just empathetic. I was born empathetic. I know that. I've had empathy in me since I've always been able to listen and be like, I understand. I've always liked listening to people and hearing their thoughts on life or their perspective of or giving people advice. I promise you, I still do it to this day. but people who are usually naturally empathetic, naturally have empathy, usually go into people work, i.e. me. I didn't know that this is the type of work that I wanted to do. I didn't know that I had such a love for children. But at the same time, it makes sense if I've been doing this my whole life, right? Individuals who work in emotional work, care with people, know that they have to also have a certain sense of compassion. And here we go. I'm going to define compassion, but please know that compassion and empathy are two different things. They're two different things. Okay. Compassion, you know, I like a good definition. So compassion is to suffer together. The feeling that arises when you are confronted with another's suffering and feel motivated to relieve that suffering. So compassion is, empathy is, I'm able to feel somebody's feelings. I understand why your feels are what they are. Compassion is to suffer with another person. Compassion means that I want to take on your load and make it mine. I want to share it with you. I want to take the burden off your back. I feel deeper for you. Some people confuse empathy and compassion and think they are one and the same, but actually they're actual levels. It's levels of understanding, levels of feeling, levels of what we can give to some people. I'm empathetic and I give empathy all day, but also I give a level of compassion. And sometimes I have to hold space for another person because they like I said, they cry on my couch and they're deeply suffering. I sit in the feelings with them and help guide them through. If a kid breaks down on my couch and it's because they finally reveal like how they feel about their mom, I have to sit in that vulnerability with them. And not only sit in that vulnerability with them, I help relieve that suffering by helping guide them to feeling better and to understanding and making peace with this newfound revelation that they have. You know, these are 14 to 18, actually 13 to 19 year old kids sometimes I have in my office. You know, everything in their world is amplified. They only been on the planet for so long. So my job is to guide them to understanding how to find their peace and understanding how this is supposed to help them in their life, which is very hard to do and understand when they're that age. Okay. So yeah, compassion is holding space. Holding space is not just like, you know, like holding space is like really listening and carrying them through. It's heavy. It is heavy. It is heavy. People who work in emotional work or personal care or home care, and when you really have to give your all to somebody else, it's draining. I can't tell you guys how many times I come home from work and the only thing that I could do is like crash on a chair or crash on the couch because I have given myself all day to over 2,300 children and adults. I don't only do that for my kids. I do this for the adults too. I do it for teachers, right? I hold space. I'm not going to lie. A lot of the reason why this podcast gets out so late or that I don't prioritize getting this out in the swiftest way is because I myself am so drained from all the compassion and empathy that I'm pouring out. I have nothing left for myself. There's no reserve. And it leads me to this, right? This can become taxing. Compassion, or the art of giving compassion to somebody else, can become taxing for the other individual because we may experience compassion fatigue. Or it can take about our own, we could take it on, right? Compassion, over identifying with someone else's emotions can be stressful and lead to cardiovascular stress responses, similar to what you would experience in the same painful in a painful or threatening situation. Sorry, y'all, I'm having trouble reading my notes. So all this is saying is like, compassion, over identifying with somebody's feelings and what they're lacking in their emotions and taking on their emotions for them can put you in stressful situations. Oftentimes it shows up as stress with you. Now you take on their anxiety, you take on their on their tears, you take on their anger, and it can shift your own emotions, right? Like I said, for 8 hours every day for a whole school year, I'm sitting in front of children and talking about their issues and taking on those issues with them. I'm sitting in their feelings with them and showing them, I can be here for you. Let me help you. Let me help you and move past this suffering together. Is exhausting. At sometimes it's an imbalance because I might come into work and not have it. I might not be feeling the best. My life might be in shambles. I might have something going on and I have to put on my face and say, no, give me your problems on top of my problems. Emotional work is taxing. This is a little segue side note. Me and my husband, before we got married, used to always have an argument about work. He would never understand truly how stressed I would be and how tired I would be coming home from work and what I did, right? Now, mind you, we met during the pandemic when I was shifting in my job. I used to work ISS, in school suspension. And even there, I did what I did now. I just didn't know that there was a job for that. I just thought it was just being a good adult. Again, me trying to be that adult that kids, like, I needed as a kid. I didn't know there was, like, actually, like, department for it, right? So that was kind of cool. But my husband works in solar. He works on the roof. He's out here in the Arizona sun when it's 115 outside on the roof and carrying big old panels, putting them up there, bending pipe, working with his hands all day, all outside. There is no office. There is no building to go into. That man is outside all day. When it is cold outside, he's out there all day. When it is snowing in Flagstaff, he is out there all day. I get it. He fights with the elements with his job. That's a different type of toughness. That's like, you know, this inner warrior athletic mindset that you got to have when you're doing outdoor work. We'll talk about that one day. But he would come home tired and feel justified, right? Because his work was physical. But to him, for me, I just sat in a chair all day and talked to kids on my phone all day, on the computer all day. I don't do much. I'm going around talking to my friend. I ain't got much to do. And we used to go back and forth of significance of work and whose work was more significant. And I would always say, not that my work is better, and my work is more important, because I would never job shame anybody. I think all work is important and good as long as you're getting a paycheck, right? Do what you need to do. Everything makes the world go around. Everybody has to have a job, right? But I would tell him my job is more taxing because I'm giving myself to people all the time. He did not understand that until he was keen to see some situations in which I had to work in action. He came on my campus a couple of times and actually saw what I had to do, heard about how I had to break up fights, saw me crying and feeling because I lost a student. And that was really hard. He was so young. He was like a month out from graduation and he passed. Like, he watched me and my work and started to realize, like, oh, she's not just sitting at a desk. Her work is very important. It takes a lot. It's draining, right? And I've had to learn to not bring my work home anymore because that's that over-identifying part, right? Because it got to an unhealthy place where I felt like I could solve everything and I won't take off of work because I feel like the campus won't function without me. You know, that's not on no God complex type of stuff either. Just like real life, if I'm not there to calm such and such down and be their crutch as they're working through this situation, they might go fight the person that they just fought just because they're in a negative space, right? So like I'm saying, like I had a very healthy unbalance, but my husband had to see, like, it's not just that physical work is more taxing because it's physical. It is, trust me, it is a brute, and I've seen the results of it. At the same time, emotional work, sitting there and taking on people's issues, can become a burden after a while, especially when you are going through your own stuff. So yes, it shows up as cardiovascular stress. I'm always grabbing my chest. And this is why I've really trying to been working on my stress levels in the past couple of months, because I'm too young to be gripping my chest every time I get stressed. Feeling as if I am going to have a heart attack. That scares me. You know what I mean? That was a little tidbit of compassion. But like I said, there's a difference between compassion and empathy. Let me get back on my notes, y'all. I'm sorry. Like I said, empathy can be negative. Sometimes it can be viewed as negative and it can have some negative connotations with it, right? It can come off as aggression or being antagonistic. And that by saying, like, some people might think they're practicing empathy, but they're actually just being nosy. There are some people who think that they're trying to be there for somebody, but they're just trying to, like, you know, really, like, control somebody by their situation. I know it's sick, but there's some people out there like that. I'm trying to tell you, okay? So yeah, actually, empathy could sometimes promote favoritism at the expense of the outgroup, right? If there is a kid that I feel more for because their life is seemingly harder than everybody else's. They're suffering way more than everybody else's. And I start to over-identify with their emotions. I can unknowingly put them on a pedestal and that's low-key excluding and isolating and dividing this kid from their peers. I'm putting them on a pedestal. Sometimes when putting a kid like that on a pedestal, you give them a little taste of power and they don't know how to handle that. And they can abuse my compassion, right? Or my over-identifying with them. Sometimes you put them on the pedestal and it's more pressure and they crack and they fold. And it could cause a division in your relationship with them. Empathy has all the great intentions, right? But like everything with great intentions and great ideals and ways to make us better, there's also ways that it can kind of make us worse. But that's when you take on the self-oriented perspective. So self-oriented perspective is you place yourself in someone else's shoes. You put on their shoes, but you do not put on their perspective. Okay? When people, I used to love, like, I could take a mile in somebody's shoes. I can always step into somebody else's shoes. Here's the thing. I can always step into somebody's shoes, but I don't know how they've been walking in them. Oh yeah, I can see your shoes. I can understand the path. I can hear what got you from point A to point B. I can know your experience and say, okay, that's the person who they are. But your decision making and your processing is something, your perspective is something that I can't put on or sometimes forget to put on. We experience our own personal distress and start to feel like we have to do all these things to be there for a person. We feel like in order to put on a person's shoes, we must now take over their whole suffering. And that's just not the case. You're supposed to gain perspective, right? That becomes a emotional burden. Now my anxiety is up because your anxiety is up. I didn't put on your shoes to understand. I put on your shoes and took on your suffering. That's what we would call self-oriented perspective taking. So in actuality, when you're telling somebody to take a walk in my shoes, no. Put on my shoes, but also understand my perspective, right? Empathy has to be something that has a reward for both sides, the giver and the receiver. And not saying that the giver is just doing it because they want some compensation. There are people who abuse empathy like that. And that's, again, why empathy can come off as negative, because some people, again, like I said, dangling that carrot in front of you, trying to use their empathy to control you for their own personal benefit. But like every relationship, right, every interaction, communication in general between two people, there must be rewards for both sides. The giver must also get something as well as the receiver. In order to do that and practice empathy in a correct way, we have to look at the other-oriented perspective taking. Dom, you're throwing a lot of stuff at me. Girl, what does this mean? Okay. Other-oriented perspective taking is you imagine others' perspective, read the emotions, and understand them in general. So I don't sit in the suffering with you. I don't sit in the thick of it with you. I hold space for you. Okay. I allow this to be a safe space where you can feel those things and that you can experience your emotions and the suffering that you have. I do not take it on. I then look at your perspective. So that's what I said when I'm sitting in front of them kids and I'm saying, okay, how are you feeling right now? I'm taking on their perspective. I am putting on their shoes and I'm reading their emotions, right? I'm not just saying you could do it. You got it. I'm reading their emotions. I'm recognizing there's anger and wanting to identify where that anger really comes from. Because like you always hear me say, anger is a secondary response, a secondary emotion. Most of the times when there's anger present, there's something else underneath. That's reading the emotions. So this other perspective is me taking on your perspective and how you see things, reading your emotions and understanding those two things together. In that space, that is where I can then be helpful to you and help you move forward or help you to start to heal or start to figure out some things about yourself. I'm giving you something, you as the receiver are walking away with some experience and the feeling of being heard and felt and loved, right? And me as the giver is getting something as well because I have helped you get to that point. not for my own reward. I've helped you get to that point. And because I work in people and because I'm an empathetic person, that fills my cup. That feeds me. We both get something out of it. The other oriented perspective taken does not consume the emotion, yet it promotes helping behaviors. It puts you in a greater mood. It prompts the pro-social behaviors on me that I want to help, that I want to be there. Genuinely, no strings attached. This is truly the difference between empathy and compassion. Compassion can energize me. This year, I told myself that I want to be energized with my work. Yes, it's still taxing. Yes, I still get tired. But at the end of the day, I want to walk away knowing that I did all that I could do and that I was there and I provided space. That's how I no longer take work home with me. And for all of those who work in emotional care or do emotional work or therapists, caregivers, home givers, hospice workers, all these people who are in very vulnerable, teachers, everybody who is in very vulnerable positions with people, you have to be able to practice empathy and also be able to know where you lie on the scale of empathetic. Are you self-oriented, perspective taking person? Like, can you only put yourself in and only take on their suffering? Or can you be empathetic and truly empathetic by helping them to understand, but also helping to guide them along? Right? Not only just putting on their shoes, but also understanding why their shoes fit the way they do. And it seems like I keep saying it over and over again because I'm trying to get the difference out there, right? There's a similarity, but there's also a major difference, and I'm hoping you guys are catching it. If so, we're going to talk about this again because I feel like I'm rushing it because my time is well spent. I talked a little bit more about school than I thought. And there's some more things that we want to get to, but I want to touch on empathy again. I'm probably going to touch on empathy again. I would love to do an episode where I get somebody who works in therapy along with me, and we're gonna have a conversation about what it is to give yourself and all of yourself, and why there are those boundaries that you need to have as an empathetic person or a person who is there cultivating somebody through a tough situation, right? To be truly empathetic, right, and not fall into the trap of dangling that carrot in front of somebody or just taking on somebody's problems or suffering, there has to be some self-reflection and things that you do on your end, right, as an individual. You guys know I love me a good little tip. I love giving little tips, a little 1, 2, 3, little steps, right? So to be empathetic or to practice genuine empathy, you have to be willing to grow continually, right? I believe that I am able to keep excelling at my job and have a deeper understanding for other people's perspectives because I'm constantly growing myself. You guys hear me talk about it all the time on here. I encourage everybody to grow all the time. Healing and the journey of life and yada, yada, whatever else you want to put out there is all about continuously growing. You don't just grow one time and then stop, right? You don't just go from a baby to an adult, right? There is puberty. There is a weaning process. There's a process where you have to shift who you are. And I don't believe there's only one puberty. I feel like every phase of your life that you enter to is a form of puberty, right? Like when I went from being a baby to a toddler, that's a transformation, right? When I went from a toddler to a kid, a older kid, a bigger kid, that was a transformation. When I went from being a kid to a preteen, right? That was a shift, right? Now I'm 12, 13. When I went from a preteen to a teenager, that was a major shift. That was what people would consider from preteen to like the end of my teenage years, puberty, right? When I entered into college and I was college age from 19 into my 20s, there was a second, there was another shift of puberty, right? As I vastly approached my 30s to where I am now, I know there is a shift. There isn't an adult puberty because my body's changing too. I look at it like you have to constantly grow. You have to constantly shed your skin. Like, okay, this is a bad example because snakes, right, have this like negative connotation around them. But like snakes shed their skin. They're constantly moving and removing old versions of themselves and moving into new places for them. We as human might not actually shed our skin, but we are constantly growing. We must constantly grow. In order to really understand somebody else's perspective, have a deeper understanding for what they are dealing with, you yourself have to be doing the work, right? Now, if I'm sitting in front of these kids and I'm telling them to do all these things to grow as a person, to be a better person, to help them and guide them through their young years, and I'm sitting there not doing it the same, one, I'm a hypocrite. Two, I am giving false information. Because one reason why people will follow you or listen to you or take you as a trusted person with their problems is because they believe that you've done the work. They can hear the confidence and the sincerity and the absolute confidence in your voice of what you're talking about. So you have to be willing to continuously grow so that you can be that example. Being empathetic also comes with being an example. Right? Like I said before, I got to come into work and I got to put on a face and I have to show up for these kids in a way, even if my life is in shambles. I have to continually grow and put myself in a position where I can say, okay, Dominique, this is how you're going to deal with your problems. You can turn it off and hold this space for this person right now. And then you could turn it back on again and you could deal with your stuff later. I have to be able to continuously grow and become a better person in order to really show empathy and be empathetic to somebody, right? To be empathetic means that I have to expose myself to differences, right? I have to immerse myself or you have to immerse yourself in different settings, right? I always tell people the greatest decision I could ever do was when I went to college, I went far away from home. I thrust myself into a situation where I knew nobody, I knew nothing, and I had to find a way to understand where I was. Okay, I went from Jersey to Florida, completely different in culture, completely different in people and interactions. Like, I saw so many white people and I was like, this many white people exist? Now, I'm from Jersey, so I did know there were a lot of white people in the world. And sorry, white people, if you're listening, this is not negative. But I didn't know it was that many. The white people that I saw were a certain type were in Jersey. In Florida, it was a whole different realm, right? I saw a different version of black people, right? I saw more Haitians, which I saw some in Jersey, but I saw more of when I was in Florida. My perspective of everything changed and shifted. I was exposed to a new certain type of culture, right? Florida, everybody can say Florida is its own country in itself, right? But I learned something different. When I moved to Kentucky, I immersed myself in that culture and that, you know, like a country almost a culture. And I had to learn so much more there. That gave me a whole different perspective in life. When I moved over here to Arizona, I've never been on the West Coast before. I'm an East Coast baby. The cultural difference between those two alone, opened up my mind to a lot of things. I immersed myself into the culture and I immersed myself into the ways of life to understand and relate to the people around me so that I can also be all right. You have to be able to put yourself in different situations. You can't just be this one-minded person. You have to be able to see somebody's perspective. Now, I might not be able to ever understand truly a white person's life because there's certain privileges and things that they have experienced that I, let's just be honest, I can never, right? I'm a dark-skinned black girl. I could never, right? But I've been in situations and I've been on jobs where I have, I've been a part of their culture. I've been a part of their events. They invited me to parties and I've gone, even though I don't understand and I could be nervous, and because I'm like, I don't want to be token black girl, or like, I don't just want to be like the only black person here. But I immerse myself with different people so that I can know how to deal with them, or how to interact with them, or how to best be my best self towards them. Right? Immersing yourself in different culture. I've been to a host of different weddings. I've been to a Native wedding. I've been to, you know, obviously a black wedding. I've been to a white wedding. And the different cultures of how we carry out weddings, even though there's baselines of similarities, right? There are major differences that help me to understand, like, ah, okay, I understand a person differently. Like, so what I'm saying to say is diversify yourself. Did I just say that right? Diversify yourself. Allow yourself to experience different cultures, different ethnicities, different experiences, different backgrounds. This is how we get to know each other more. This is how we become a stronger country, a stronger world. Most of the times, people are judging other people based off things they don't know. Because everybody feels so foreign and alien to one another. But it's like, if we take our time to really just sit there and get to learn each other's perspective. I'm not saying all of a sudden now I understand white people and I want to dye my hair blonde and I want to act white. And, I'm denouncing black. And it's like, no. Just the same, like, white people don't come over to our culture and be like, okay, I went to a couple of barbecues and I watched a couple of music videos and now I want to get my hair braided and wear some bamboo earrings and now I want to get these nails and be like, hey girl, no, that's appropriation. You can immerse yourself in culture and immerse yourself in somebody else's understanding of life and not feel like now it has to become your own. Because honestly, you feel like you're showing compassion, but you're over-identifying and you're making a fool of yourself. Oops, was I not supposed to say that? Sorry. Let me move forward because I done got on my soapbox. When practicing empathy or being an empathetic person, you got to find common ground, right? You find a baseline. You find a baseline of what you and that other person have in common. And you let that be your common ground. If not, you're going to always focus on the differences between you and somebody else. This is another thing I hear people all say. Well, I say it to you sometimes, like, these kids are just different. These kids are just different. And oftentimes, that is true. But when you really peel back some things, you take away the technology, you take away the modern advances, a lot of the things these kids are going through are things that we did too. A lot of these things kids are doing, we did too. Come on, somebody. Okay? It's things that we did as well. It's just amplified, or it might be different because of this day and age. The lengths that kids might go to in order to do some wild things out here that we did when we were younger. We didn't have the advances, you know. It's the multitude of which they're doing it, and which is shocking to me. But I'm never going to forget how I was in high school and how I act and things I said and how I cussed and the type of conversations I had. You know, like the way I bullied people. Like, I will never forget that. Right. And that's why I don't focus on the differences between me and these kids or the differences between me and somebody else. I really try to find where we have common ground. Because if I find out our baseline, what we both share, I can hook my empathy on that. Everything else, I can understand that that's your perspective and that's how you see things. But my empathy comes from us finding a common ground and a baseline that we share. To be empathetic, you have to understand your biases. You have to understand the bias that you have and understand that it is your bias. It is not somebody else's bias to hold. It is yours. It is something that you have to work through. That's where that continually growing thing comes from. To be empathetic, you have to understand your bias and your perspectives and some of the negative ones as well, and work on that. And lastly, to be empathetic means to ask questions. You're actively listening, but loop back with somebody. Make sure you're getting the full story what somebody is trying to convey to you. You know what I mean? Just don't sit there and just sit there and not ask questions. Asking questions, it allows for vulnerability to happen. It allows for an exchange and conversation to happen. It allows for things to be unearthed, and therefore, and for conversation or your interaction with that person to go on a deeper level. You know, when somebody inquires about you and wants to know about you and has opened up for conversation and has made it a welcoming environment, it's easier for you to then divulge how it is that you feel and what it is that you feel. That's really how I do my job. I ask the questions to deepen our conversation. And the more vulnerability that the kids feel comfortable with, the more they start to tell me of what's going on in their life. Being empathetic is not easy. It's not something that everybody is capable of doing. But it's something that we should strive for, especially in our community right now, especially in our society. And I look out and I see everybody is so divided and everybody's online. And we forget that there's another person on the side of that has emotions, that feelings, that are going through things just like us, if not worse. We forget that through all of this, through everything that we have experienced on this planet as a people, we forget the human of it all. We got to be better with that. Forgive me for my time being well spent. This episode goes a little bit longer. It's coming out a lot later, but it's coming out. So please, I'm asking you to be empathetic of me right now. But don't over-identify with my emotions. Hold me accountable. Hold me accountable. And after track season, which is over next week, this is going to be a lot easier. And we can dive a little bit more. But we're going to come back to empathy for sure. I just wanted you guys to kind of understand that we're humans. And as humans, we have to show up for each other in a different way. Because the way that we're moving as a society right now, there's no sense of community. There's no baseline. There's no sense of love. There's a lot of healing that needs to take place. But who's going to finally do it? When is enough going to be enough? When are we as a people going to stand up and hold each other up? Well, first that comes with us holding each other. That comes with us first doing the work within ourselves, being self-aware and identifying that. Let me stop talking to y'all. Let me stop talking y'all ear off. Let me stop talking y'all ear off. I hope y'all enjoyed this week's episode. I hope it resonates with you. I hope it's something that you could, you know, take and bring with you into your week or whatever have you. I don't even know how to close this out. I don't know. I'm grateful. And I made a video about this, but I want to make sure I put it on here as well. I'm so grateful for everybody that's been listening. I'm grateful for the feedback. I'm grateful for the empathy that is shown. I'm grateful for what we are building. I'm trying not to cry, y'all. I'm sorry. Try not to get emotional. I really believe that the work that is getting done here and that the conversations that we are having and you know, the notes and stuff like that are all going to reach the people. I truly now believe it's going to reach the people it needs to reach, and it will start to shift a lot of people's life. And for that, right now, I'm emotional and I'm so excited, because all I want to do is help people. Even if sometimes I don't know how to help myself, my heart is so big that I want to help others, and I want other people to feel loved, and I want other people to feel seen, and I want other people to feel like they can make it. Because again, I know how it feels like to feel like you can't. So I'm just grateful for everybody listening and tuning in, for the messages that you guys send. And I love doing this. So it's never a burden. It's never something I don't enjoy. I enjoy doing this so much. I love y'all. I love y'all. I love y'all. This is your girl, the Damo. Mind Your Business podcast. Trying to sit here and remind you that your mind should forever and always be your business. Make it your business this week. I'll see you next time. Bye.